Miff Warhurst.
Weekdays on ABC Radio, online and on the ABC Listen app.
Skateboarding was once more a countercultural activity, but now everyone from toddlers to teens to corporate execs are in on the act. One young person who is part of that change is 17-year-old professional skateboarder Poppy Star Olsen. Welcome, Poppy.
Hi.
Now, someone who knows the history of Australian skate culture, so much so he's just written an extensive book about it, Jason Bolter. Hi, Jason.
Hi.
And we're joined also by Professor Lisa Wood, who reckons skateboarding is good for you and also good for public places. Welcome, Lisa.
Morning from the West.
I'll start with a question for you, Poppy. When did you start skating?
I started skating when I was 8 years old. And yeah, just kind of a family friend just gave me a board one day and I kind of just started trying it out and it all went from there, really.
Skating is obviously part of your life, so much so that you're about to head into the Olympics in 2020. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
What is it about skating that entices you?
The reason that I kind of stuck to it at the start was because it wasn't really like anything else that I'd ever done before, and it's just such a like an amazing outlet for creativity, and there's just so many new things to learn and you're hanging out with your friends and you're having fun.
Skateboarding's had a strong cultural presence in Australia since probably the 70s, and I reckon, Jason, you might be someone who can speak to that. What did the skateboarding scene look like in the 70s through the 80s?
Sure.
It
even goes back to the 60s a bit when we had the first visiting Americans like Russ Howell and Stacy Peralta. Throughout the sort of mid-80s and then later 80s, it started getting bigger and it started getting into the big things like the Ramp Riot events. It started getting a lot bigger and a lot more commercial then too. Just amazing to think it's going to the Olympics and things like that. And you always get this sort of core tension between, you know, a small group of people who think they've got a real subculture, but obviously it's very mainstream and mass market at the same time.
Mm. Your book is extensive on the history of a couple of fellows who brought skating culture into the mainstream via the hardcore and globe organisations. The book is fascinating. There's beautiful photographs in there. You can get a real sense of the history. One thing I did notice, though, it's very blokey, isn't it?
Yes, yes. There weren't
many women involved in skating so much.
No, not really. There was, going right back, there were people like Cindy Whitehead in California, and there's always been women around on the sort of periphery, and then there's been, you know, girls that have given it a go. We didn't really see the first sort of events for girls till the really late 90s.
Yep.
And so, but it's only till fairly recently that it's actually got a lot more of a presence and it's a lot more accepted.
Well, that's why I'm talking to you, Poppy Star Olsen, because what's it like as a woman at the forefront, I guess, forging a whole new generation of women in a brand new sport?
It's really cool, especially having a lot of younger Australian girls like look up to you. It's kind of really inspiring and cool to see that I'm part of this movement a little bit. When I first started skateboarding, I was the only girl at skate park for about 3 years until I started making a couple friends and a couple local girls started showing up. But now there's just so many, it's just progressed so much and there's so many female skateboarders in the sport now, and I know faces from all around the world, and yeah, it's just really progressing and it's really good to see.
Lisa, there was mention of skate parks there, and I know that you've done quite a bit of research into skate parks and the impact they have on cities and towns. What role do they play?
Firstly, I think the important thing, and Poppy's a testimony to that, is they provide a place for young people to participate in the amazing, creative, skillful activity that she's been talking about. And so my research really came out of a concern about where are the places for young people in our communities other than the playground, and kids were saying to us, including my own, you know, the playground's pretty boring beyond the age of 9 or 10, and really what places were there? And one of the only places that was being provided at the time by local government other than sporting fields was the skate park, but they were getting a lot of bad rap about, you know, it's just a hangout for people using drugs and, you know, all that kind of stereotyping. Yeah. And so I guess we've been trying to dispel that stereotype with our research and really say that they're a vital part of placemaking. And Scarborough down at our foreshore here in Western Australia has just opened a skate area kind of right in the heart of where the cafe is and the redevelopment, and there's a pool, and it's just
fantastic.
So fantastic. There's young girls there trying it. There's parents watching, there's people passing by, and to me that's the ultimate, that you've got this kind of vibrancy that skateboarding can bring, because people can be doing it or they can be enjoying watching it and bringing it into the placemaking of our towns and cities.
You talk about the negative impacts of adolescents who are excluded from public places in the public realm, and skaters are the first people that you think about when it comes to that. Is there any research into this?
Yeah, we did some research here with one of the skate parks in a local government area exactly for that reason, because we wanted to kind of test this idea about is it really, you know, the den of, you know, people picking on each other and using drugs and all that kind of thing. And we, being good researchers, we didn't go in there with a bias. So we actually asked a whole lot of questions of people using and attending that skate park about what went on. And what we found was the more common behaviours that people observed and talked about were the pro-social things. So people hanging out with their friends that Poppy's talked about, people taking turns, older kids mentoring young kids, people falling over and kind of learning from their mistakes. So all these positive things. And then much fewer people commented on, you know, the things that got stereotyped around graffiti or litter and those kind of things. So it was really the pro-social behaviours that we were able to capture in that study. And I think that's started to change this lens about how skate parks are viewed.
Yeah. Jason, have you noticed a change in the culture?
The one thing that sort of changed over time is that it's less tribal than it used to be. So you used to be just a skater, but if you go to a skate park now, you'll see kids rock up with a skateboard, a scooter, and then they'll talk about going surfing or snowboarding later.
Is there an unsung language or a code? And I think you can all probably answer this with your observations of skate parks over the years and skate comps. I imagine, Jason, you'd all know this, Poppy, as a participant. And in your research, Lisa, about skateboarding, is there an unspoken code between skaters that you need to understand before you can even hit the skate park?
I guess you kind of pick it up as you're learning. That's kind of one of the things that I've really noticed. Like, you kind of go to the skate park and you kind of get advice from the older skaters and people around, and you pick it up as you go, really. No one can really understand it, I guess, until you go to the skate park for the first time, I feel like.
So if I turn up in my little scooter, am I welcome and I can't do it or not? What do I do? How do I navigate that?
Well, everyone's pretty supportive of everything. I mean, it's probably harder riding a scooter at a skate park. Depends who the skateboarders are there, but you just kind of, there's little things you learn along the way, like just when to go and, like, how to not get in people's way, that kind of thing.
There is that great universal acceptance of people trying, little ones trying, people don't mind. Skaters are really good at taking turns at parks and things like that. And also just that whole thing about street skating, about getting, you know, people are out in the environment and actually exploring the city.
Would you say that a skate park is a place you've seen people develop life skills?
Yes, I would definitely say that, and not only through the survey we did in that study, but lots of observational work, partly as a mum sitting on the sidelines when my kids were younger. And it's exactly that. I think it's like a microcosm of life lessons. You know, Jason mentioned taking turns, people pick themselves off, they learn resilience, they learn to kind of navigate around others. They learn to learn from others. I think all of that is really powerful life lessons. And in an age where we've got, you know, youth mental health in crisis, we've got a lot of talk about how do we build resilience in our young people, how do we kind of get them away from the screens. I think a skate park and that kind of activity that goes on there is offering all of that. But as Poppy said, it's kind of, there's this informal way that people learn that from each other. And I think that's fantastic. That's what young people need, to learn all those life skills, but in an informal way while they're having fun at the same time.
Skateboarding's so much about persistence and learning those tricks and learning to, you know, progress. People often say, oh, what are those kids doing mucking around or whatever? But if you actually watch them, they'll put in hours and hours and hours of doing, you know, what they're trying to do. I'm sure Poppy's done that.
It's all just like progressing and having fun at the same time. And even if you're just mucking around, it's just really fun to hang out with your friends and just skate all the time and adapt to new places, and just everything about it, it's just really fun.
Lisa, in your studies, have you come across an older generation of skateboarders?
I did actually. Firstly, in the study we were doing at a particular skate park, there were kind of second generational, there were parents there kind of encouraging their kids to skate. But one of the groups that got in contact with me were called the Old Boy Skaters in Perth. And they were fantastic because they had kind of reconnected with skating in their 40s and 50s, and they were teamed up with myself and some other young guys from Skate Sculpture here who were, you know, advocating for a skate park at the time in our inner city CBD area. It didn't get up at the time, but maybe they should have another shot. But yeah, I thought it was fantastic that we had these older skaters still doing it, but also teaming up with younger ones and really advocating for it being an option for all people of whatever age.
Yeah, that's great news.
It's never too late.
It's never too late. I could start today if I wanted to.
I think our problem is we haven't persisted enough listening to Poppy. I think I just haven't, tried hard enough.
But you've got to be happy falling on concrete a lot.
Yeah, that's true, which doesn't work with older bones. But, you know, are there precautions we can take? I mean, is it still the old knee pads and elbow pads? Do they work?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Helmets probably for older people and depending what you're skating as well. Yeah, really important.
Well, it's been brilliant to talk to you all, and I love that the culture of skateboarding is being more broadly accepted within the wider community. Just finally, we spoke about the role of skate parks before. How important do you think it is to have a skate park in a town?
Well, I'm a big fan of it, and that's me speaking, not as a skater myself. Not just, I think, for young people or anyone who wants to skate, but I think symbolically they send a really powerful message, because what we've seen in some of our other research is that young people feel like they're marginalised and excluded. You know, they get moved on from shopping centres. If there is a skate park, it's often kind of in some remote area. There's not a lot that says to young people and teens, you know, you're welcome here, we cater for you. And so I think having a skate park is a really symbolic gesture, if nothing else. And also they're really popular. And I just had an email yesterday from a mother saying that her local council doesn't like them and wants to get rid of it. And I just feel like we need to move on from that attitude. And we provide cricket ovals and football fields. Not everyone wants to do those sports, but we accept that they're in our community. So why not provide for skaters as well?
Very good point. And Poppy, you're off to the 2020 Olympics. How's the preparation going?
Oh, it's very different from, I guess, everything else that I'm used to, but we're all kind of, all the skaters in Australia and all around the world are getting really used to it, and just kind of, we're all still skating and doing everything we used to, but we're kind of training differently outside of skateboarding now. And the preparation's been really good, and it's just fun. I don't know, just skating with my friends and all working together, and yeah, just having an overall goal is really cool.
I'm calling it gold for Australia.
Me too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, all three of you. I've been joined by skateboarder Poppy Star Olsen, Jason Bulter, who is the author of Unemployable, 30 Years of Hardcore Skate and Street, and it's a fascinating document into the history of skateboarding in Australia, and also Associate Professor at the Centre for Social Impact and School of Population and Health at the University of Western Australia, Lisa Wood. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Miff Warhurst on ABC Radio.